Good morning and welcome to approximately the 100 municipalities, utilities, and organizations from across our great province. And thank you for taking the time to join us this morning. My name is Mike Mortimer. I'm the president of the Ontario Municipal Water Association, or the OMWA. As well, I work for the City of Stratford. I will be one of the moderators for today's discussions, along with Justina Bursiewicz from the Region Appeal, representing the Water Wastewater Regulatory Compliance Group, as well as Laura Smith from the City of Orillia and fellow board member. Finally, we have Nick Benkovich, who is our member relations person at the OMWA. Nick will be working behind the scenes, managing our questions as they come forward throughout the upcoming hour or so. Since the beginning of this COVID-19 crisis, we've all heard the media saying many times over the last 5 to 6 weeks, we are all in this together. This simply means that we are relying on each other to do the right thing, to succeed, and quite frankly, survive. The OMWA has always had a similar philosophy. That philosophy is all about collaboration and working together. Our association believes that we are all stronger together, much better off together, and we will all succeed if we work together to overcome all difficult circumstances and challenges. This discussion room event is one example of our philosophy in action. The OMWA is extremely pleased to be once again working with the Water Wastewater Regulatory Compliance Group to offer this free-to-all event to support Ontario municipalities, utilities, organizations involved with providing the essential services of water and wastewater, and who are dealing in each their own way with the COVID-19 emergency. As I mentioned earlier, we have nearly 100 participants on today's event, with about 50% of those represented as OMWA members. For all of our members, we thank you for your continued support, and it is your membership fees that generate the funds necessary to deliver these programs and events. For those on today's webinar who are not members, we would be so happy to have you on board and provide to you the many benefits of being an OMWA member. So please consider an OMWA membership if you do not already have one, so that we can continue to support your efforts and provide events like this one this morning. As many of you know, the OMWA and the Water Wastewater Regulatory Compliance Group had collaborated with Aziz Ahmed from the MECP and other ministry staff in an attempt to host a webinar last Friday. Regretfully, this webinar was canceled at the last minute because the MECP staff, who are significantly involved with the COVID-19 emergency, became unavailable. Despite last week's cancellation, we've had overwhelming responses to both our Made in Ontario webinars. They were specifically designed to focus on Ontario issues, situations, and regulations, and to keep you all in the loop with the latest COVID-19 developments and to assist our industry in some impactful way. After discussion with the OMWA team, it was felt that the best way to achieve this was through an interactive sharing of challenges and hopefully finding common ground solutions. It is our hope that at the end of today's session, you will have a better understanding of how your organization's response to the COVID-19 emergency compares to your peers, and that you have obtained some helpful information on common questions and issues. You may be surprised with some of the answers that we've seen. Of course, there will be questions that we cannot answer, but we will collect those questions and direct them on your behalf to MECP, who have indicated to us that they should be able to respond in some fashion in the near future. At this time, I will pass the proceedings over to Justina for her opening comments and to go over the formats of today's webinar. Justina?
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. COVID-19 pandemic made us embrace change like never before. Mike did mention that. We continue adapting to these unprecedented situations. We are in this together, and it's really wonderful that Ontario Municipal Water Association has provided us with this opportunity. We could connect. We can keep municipal water and wastewater owners, operating authorities informed. I wanted to go through the logistics of the session. The objective of today's session will be to review the results of the survey that I am pleased to say most of you did complete. There's some exciting findings that we'll be sharing with you. And we hope to promote discussion on the topics. We'll be looking at challenges around it. We'll be trying to fill the gaps. And again, sharing the information that may have not been part of that questionnaire. Mike, Laura, and I will be turning turns and presenting the survey findings and facilitating the questions. The session has been set up to allow to ask questions. You have seen this on the opening screen. And to ask the questions, simply raise your hand through the participant portal. So there is a little bit of work on your end. The hand icon is located on the bottom of the screen next to your name. Considering that we have a large number of participants, I believe we have about 70 at this point, not every question may be addressed. So I just wanted to make everybody mindful of that. But if that happens, we will ask that the questions that you have that were not answered are provided to Ontario Municipal Water Association staff by email to admin@omwa.org. And with that, I will pass it over to Laura to say a few words.
Thank you, Mike and Justina. So as they have said, thank you again for joining us here today. This COVID-19 has been a difficult time for all of us. It's hard to believe that this is the situation we're in, and yet we're still here. So we're coming to discuss these Made in Ontario topics. But I did want to emphasize, it's not that we know anything more than anybody else in here. I'm hoping to gain just as much information from this conversation as you as the participants. So I know that one of the biggest challenges we've been seeing in our organization is the fact that the evolution of the information coming out is so rapid that how do we keep up and make informed, educated decisions that really work well for our operations to maintain our level of service, but primarily to make sure that we've protected the safety of our operators and ourselves. So my hope is that from the discussions we're going to have today, I'm going to be able to take back for myself, what are we doing right? What do we need to improve on? And what do we need to keep our eye on coming up in the future that others have considered that we haven't? So your participation and feedback is going to be critical as we move forward. So thank you. All right. So if we wanted to go into the first results then, I think Justine is going to put up the screen here. So again, we thank everybody who took the time to fill out the survey. This is really interesting for us. Again, one of the big takeaways from any of these kinds of communications is, are we on the right track? Are we lagging behind everybody else? And who is at the forefront? Who's thought about these things and where are they going that we can maybe build on and learn from? So this first question is about our operational resiliency. And interestingly enough, this was one of the questions that was key for our organization because we were trying to figure out how do we manage our staff. We're a little bit unique in our medium-sized system here. We have three groups of operators. We have water treatment, wastewater treatment, and our collection distribution group. The two treatment groups, so between water and wastewater, we share operators. So in total, including our management staff, we have about 21 certified operators. But because we have single large facilities, how do we manage all of that staff to the best resources? So it's interesting, as much as the shelter in place seems to be gaining and garnering some headlines, I've seen articles from Brandon, Manitoba, and places in California. Clearly, nobody in Ontario has, any of this group has started to go to that part. And I know, interestingly, 13 people did indicate that they're using a combination of all of these kinds of staffing things. And I can say, for our organization, we've done some of all of them at different points. So you know, we started out with just doing physical distancing and PPE. We've then moved on to reducing our on-site staff and rotating some staff at home, some staff at work. And starting next week, we've created new shifts. And so our crews and are going to be separated. We looked at how many people can we keep on-site at any given point, but still maintain that physical distance. So clearly there's not a one size fits all solution. And I know some of the other information I've reviewed for us, because we have limited number of facilities, there's single facilities that are large, it's difficult for us to manage. But I know some of the smaller municipalities that have distinct remote stations in different locations, it's actually a little bit easier because you can assign staff to go into that area and specifically work in that way. So I'm interested to hear, is there something else that people are doing that isn't on this list? Anything else that people have tried and it didn't really work, or anything that they're considering going forward? So hopefully Nick can help us and let us know.
So yes, Laura, I do see a hand up from Gord Shaw from the township of Edwardsburg Cardinal. So Gord, if you wanted to proceed with your question or comment.
Is he unmuted?
Yeah.
Gord, Gord, are you there?
Okay, well, perhaps he accidentally clicked on the hand up button.
Any other comments from anyone? Maybe Justina or Mike, did you want to jump in and talk about how you're managing it in your facilities?
Laura, it's Mike. I think there might be some overlap here on the questions that that we're going to be addressing today. Of course, I'll be speaking to staff recruiting and training in the next question, and then maintenance activities. It's all kind of intertwined in a way, in terms of how you're dealing with your staff and managing frontline operations. So deeming, you know, essential versus non-essential work, deeming, you know, how many personnel required, you know, at any one time to be able to perform at least the basic functions in water and wastewater. So I think we'll probably generate some discussion as we go forward through the remaining questions as well. I think there's some overlap I see coming up.
And I just wanted to add that I really find the reducing staff or rotating staff quite interesting, where a different approach of actually dividing your group and rotating with staff being, I guess, more protected at home, where you could have that resource available when needed, where others may be having all the staff, all the hands on deck, but yet taking a risk and with protecting of staff, but yet maybe maintaining all the requirements for compliance and all the operational activities. So it's really interesting to see that diversity in approaches.
Thank you. And if there's no other comments, then maybe Mike, you can go into the next question.
Sure. Sweet. For that to come up. Okay, question two. Has COVID-19 prompted your municipality utility to recruit and train resources to supplement operations staff if staff gets sick? So the results are 45%. We don't have a plan yet. Approximately 45%. We have a plan to recruit and train, but haven't initiated it yet. 9%. We are actively recruiting and training, and 0%. We'd like to, but don't know how to look for emergency relief resources. So again, we didn't. I don't know if we indicated in the polling. I think this question may depend, or the answer to this question may depend on the size of municipality or organization. I think risk may be likely correlated to the size of your staff. Obviously, the smaller the size, I think the more the risk of losing a larger percentage of your workforce, obviously. And I would think it would be these organizations who may be at most risk, who may be looking for, you know, alternative plans, you know, at the current moment in case their workforce does go down. I don't want to speak to the specifics of the regulation, the emergency regulation that came out last week, but there are, in my opinion, some provisions in there that do help with some flexibility on the operating side in terms of recruitment and, you know, even things as simple as taking chlorine residuals. So I think that does help. And I think I would implore organizations to revisit your OREG 12804 and the guidance documents that pertain to that regulation, just to kind of go over, you know, what defines operating a system. Sometimes you may be surprised at activities that can be performed by non-licensed or unlicensed staff. So that's something that we would I would implore people to, or organizations to, look at and review, just from a, you know, review perspective. Perhaps there's some functions or activities or exercises that can be done by non-licensed staff. I'll throw it over to the group. I don't know if anyone had any other ideas or any other comments regarding this question. I'd be interested to hear them now.
Marcus Fearman, do you have a comment or a question?
I can actually address both points here. The first point is with regard to the previous slide, we're unique in Muskoka as well, in that we actually have a combination of 18 water and wastewater systems. Our crews are broken up into various area crews, so we have resiliency in our structure and the way that we are have separate working groups that are isolated. We're currently running at full capacity. We're currently fully staffed. But yes, we have a contingency plan moving forward. We've established what our minimum levels will be required to operate and stay within compliance. And we have a breakpoint somewhere between full complement and that minimum requirement where we will actually start training. We're not needing to now. In fact, our staff complement has gone up since the beginning of the crisis because we have people that are in self-isolation. They've now all returned to work and we're running at full capacity with our staff. So we have no vacancies. We're fully staffed, although it's behooven of us to actually have contingency plans should things become worse. And I believe we have those in place. We'll actually start employing some of our engineering staff to train. We'll actually train when we get to what we believe is a level where we would need to bring in additional personnel to assist those that can work. So I think it's just a matter of looking to the future and actually planning for the worst and hoping it doesn't happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcus. Great points. Sorry, Nick, anyone else?
No, I don't see any other questions at this time.
Okay, I think that's a great discussion point. And as Marcus indicated, in Muskoka, with so many separate systems, it really will be a case by case, I guess, depending on complexity, number of systems, number of staff, and how you can, I guess, send them out and segregate as much as possible. With that, I will pass it over to Justina for question three.
Before we move to question three, I was just interested because we have a quite large response rate. 45% of participants had mentioned they don't have a plan yet. I would be really interested to hear from someone out of the 45% to perhaps elaborate as to why would they not have the plan? Is that the contingency plan that Marcus was talking about, or do they just feel that they're in such a great shape and they have some magic options in place that they can employ? It would be really great if somebody could, out of the 45%, speak to that, if you don't mind. Nick, anyone?
I don't see any response at this time.
All right. Well, perhaps we can do it offline because that is a really interesting finding that we have here. So moving to question three, this is certainly in more in my area as a regulatory compliance person. And the question was whether municipalities or utilities fully understand the process that the ministry put in place, which is to seek the pandemic emergency relief from regulatory requirements, and whether they have access to the correct forms. It was actually surprising that we still have 13 percent of participants who were not aware of the forms or the relief process perhaps being in place. That may be related to, you know, the pandemic and the rapid speed of the infections and the escalation. I think it just the state of emergency created a bit of a chaos for everyone. Everybody, including the ministry, was trying to organize, making sure that they could assist municipalities with compliance and maintenance of any requirements that they may be under legal instruments, licenses, permits, regulation 170. Mike did speak earlier about the provisions of the Regulation 75, which is the under the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act. It does provide a level of like a blanket relief that speaks to certification and licensing and staff coverage of how you can actually still maintain operational activities with persons who are not certified just by having them trained or supervised. Without getting in too much detail, I wanted to address maybe the fact that the process for relief is in place. The ministry rolled it out. Is it perfect? Not, but it is. It's not crystal clear as how the process ends. Some of us are still waiting for relief, the formal relief. I'm speaking from behalf of the region of Peel. We have applied for reg relief a couple of weeks ago and we have not heard back, although we have been assured that when we putting or we seeking reg relief in exchange of protecting our staff, making sure that we put control measures in place to make sure that staff are working safe and respecting the physical distancing and you know, any other measures that are in place. So with that, we are have been assured that even though we may not have that reg relief in hand, we are to continue protecting staff and carry out the work as necessary, which our interpretation is that it's implied that we will be exempt from it. There are two forms. The ministry had created two forms for reg relief. One is specific to water and one to wastewater. Actually, there are sub-forms under each. One is for municipal, one is for non-municipal. And they are fillable forms. The process itself, in order to get the forms, one needs to contact the ministry. And the contact address is the mdwlp@ontario.ca, which is the Municipal Drinking Water Licensing Program. And in response, the ministry will provide the form that is applicable to the relief. One thing that may be not necessarily user-friendly is the fact that the forms cannot accommodate multiple systems. Actually, there is a requirement to have each relief form filled for just one drinking water subsystem or facility for wastewater. And the populating of forms may be a little bit frustrating. Again, it's not everything is working perfect. There is also some, and again speaking for the region of Peel, where we have a wastewater plants and incineration facility. We have not explored the relief from air ECA and any air regulatory requirements, something that we do have in place. We certainly, like most of you, have a contingency plan with triggers. And as we see the emergency escalate, we employ or look for relief. So with that, I am pleased to see that 36% of participants have actually contacted the ministry and they are looking at scaling back again in order to protect the staff and have reg relief in place. Some of them, let me just see. We have forms understand the process for seeking relief. Again, it's good to know because having maybe even pre-populated forms, depending on the situation, you just quickly send them off and have the ministry process the forms. Another option could be possibly just creating one reg relief form that would include everything, except then there's a mechanism that has to be put in place on how we I guess, with the triggers of escalation when we do need certain level of requirements relieved, whether it's calling Spills Action Center or the ministry. So again, a little bit of unclear, not everything is clear. We have a very good relationship with Aziz. Mike did speak to that. Aziz, since his change of portfolio, where now he is looking after the municipal sector for both water and wastewater, I think that he is a great contact person with any questions, as well as the mdwlp@ontario.ca, where a team, ministry team, is responding to any inquiries and any questions. So with that, I'll ask Nick if there are any questions, if anybody would like to share their experience, and just please raise your hand.
Thanks, Justino. Yes, we do have a question comment from Sarah from Smith Falls, who's having some trouble with her mic on her computer, but sends us a message that starting next week, in Smith Falls, they'll be separating their operators into two teams at both their water and water pollution control plant for 7-day shifts a week, working a 9-hour shift. And they'll have one class 4 operator on each of those shifts.
Yeah, it's there's different, again, depending on the size of the municipality. Laura did speak to the size of hers. The Region of Peel is a large municipality. We have remote locations, remote yards. We have overall 170 operators, water, wastewater. So one may think we have coverage. Certainly a lot of area to cover. We do have a large system in South Peel. We also have groundwater systems. Our surface plans are quite complex, so again, more regulatory requirements in place that we have to follow. It really all depends on even cutting down or scaling back on some of the non-regulatory whether it's sampling or some operational activities that we all put in place kind of on top of the minimum requirements. So there's some flexibility the ministry is providing us with. I definitely, and we'll speak to that later, there's a training compliance and certification question as well. But I just wanted to really emphasize that working together with the ministry is key. The partnership is very meaningful and we all in this together. So if someone is not aware of how the process works, reach out. The same thing speaking now on behalf of the water, wastewater regulatory compliance. There is a pool of professionals, compliance professionals that from all the, well, many municipalities, and the forum is great in sharing information, regulatory based. So if there's any compliance questions or operational questions, definitely leverage that. If you're not a member, definitely connect with myself. I'd be happy to guide you how to get there. So any other questions on specific to relief? It is a very hot topic.
Yes, we do have another question from Amherstburg, Dan Bolu. Who is asking, he's attempting to gain clarification from everyone on their municipality's approach with respect to working from home. So maybe he's looking to find out who's working from home. Is it really supervision and management only, all but essential services, and who's been deemed essential?
That's a very interesting question. And I know that we've seen a lot in the news lately on some of the municipalities laying off non-essential services. I think in the water wastewater division, we are deemed essential. And I think we need to really look at not just the field staff, not just the boots on the ground, not just the operations groups, the capital groups that may support it, compliance groups. There's a lot of kind of teams in the background that make it all happen. At the Region of Peel, every staff member within the water wastewater division is deemed essential. We've had a few people who, again, considering the circumstances, we do have schools closures where staff may have to be at home because they have no other choice. And considering working from home for everyone who is not operational and anybody who provides support that could be provided from home, that would spin the direction. We in Peel have every staff member in operations in the field. We're not rotating right now. However, we have taken the approach of having staff report to different locations. So instead of now used to be 3 yards, now we have about 6 or 7 locations that staff report to, again, not to have them congregate and gather in one space. So at Peel, working from home, everyone who is not actually hands-on, operational, and any support teams that that could work from home to still perform their duty. Anyone else that could speak to that?
Thank you, Justina. We do have 2 questions queued up, now 3. The first one is Donna from the municipality of Kincardine. And so I'll unmute Donna. There we go.
Hi. Well, just in response to that last question about what the staff is doing at home. So we did split our shift operators into 2 shifts. And so we have half working at home and half out in the field. And while the ones that are at home, some of them are looking after kids. But what we have done is we have made sure that they have electronic access to all operations manuals, all contingency plans, SOPs, DWQMS documents. So they are reviewing those. And I'm keeping track of all of the reviews. And as well, now we're setting up online training. So if anybody also knows of good online training, we'd love to hear about that as well. I raised my hand because I was actually wondering if we could have some people share what kind of things that they are actually seeking relief from. We have found that when we look at what we have to do to meet regulation at this point, we don't have an issue with that. So we have not applied for any relief for anything, but I'd like to hear what some people are applying for so that maybe there's something that I've missed that I'd like to be aware of.
Thank you, Donna.
I could answer the question for Donna, for the region of Peel. We've applied for the reg relief, as I mentioned earlier, and the 3 items that we have asked for right now is, 1 is the lead testing. We have not been able to complete our non-residential plumbing sampling within this sampling round that ends April 15th. And the reason for it was that typically we utilize community centers, and with closure of all the community centers and closure of everything days after, we were unable to collect the samples. Plus, with the physical distancing and protection of our staff, we did not want our operators to actually visit any private premises. A second reg relief was specific to the water main disinfection procedure. We've decided there was an operational internal decision made that all the water main breaks would be deemed category 2. As we know from the procedure, that any service pipes that are 100 millimeters or greater are considered water mains. And you can, considering category 2, which mandates that sample are collected and downstream from the break, with a service pipe, it would be then impossible for us, with all the measures that we have in place, to collect a sample downstream from a building, a private building. So we have asked that we are relieved with that, and in exchange we were demonstrating disinfection through informing the property owner or the manager to flush the water for the volume of depending on the length of the service and whether it's time or volume, and that was the second red relief, and the third was specific to our legal instrument, a license. Those who have a new template of licenses, the source protection is in there. Some of the conditions, again, different municipalities may have different conditions depending where you are. We had a development implementation of harmful algal blooms plan to be developed and implemented by May 17th of this year. With everything that's going on and the training of staff that would be required, we had asked for extension. And I believe we had asked for a 6-month extension to having that plan developed and implemented. And we do understand that likely this would, the algal season would be over by the time we implemented. But again, we, in order to comply, we couldn't meet the timelines. I'll be happy to hear anybody else if we have time. I'm just trying to track the time as well.
Okay, our next question comes from Julie Friel at the City of Greater Sudbury. Julie, I'll unmute you. There we go.
I was just going to add to some of the relief that we've done, and we've also had to do lead relief. We were able to capture a lot of our residential samples by sending out a mass email to our employees within that system. We still fell short about 5, so we applied for relief. We were able to get an email confirming the relief, but we haven't gotten any paperwork or documentation at this point. Something that we've done for our employees that have been deemed non-essential is they have been redeployed in either plants, fleet facilities, and their main duty is to disinfect between shifts or clean the fleet vehicles. We have also taken a few per plant, and they'll be going through the SOPs on for training non-certified staff for what duties they can do. And that's pretty much all I wanted to add for now.
Thank you, Julie. We may have some additional questions. We probably should continue and move on to question 4. Those who have a question, please park it, please email it to us, and we'll be happy to respond and have, I guess, chat offline. So going to question number 4, which is actually still mine. We were looking at supply chain problems, any issues with our essential supplies and service providers and delivery of services. It's really good to see that majority of participants today have contacted the suppliers or service providers, and really just to confirm that expectation of receiving the service as we go through the pandemic. A few people are counting on the province, and I don't know what that's going to look like, and what point would the ministry actually, or the province, reach out to help. I think that considering some of the challenges experienced at a provincial level, at a federal level, in terms of health care may be of priority right now. And I don't think that we are at the stage where we need to reach out for emergency. Later on, we have a question on WERN. I think that Laura will be speaking to that. And there's opportunity to maybe collaborate with other municipality. But I'm really pleased to see that 70% are doing what DWQMS, and if you have a wastewater QMS or IMS or some type of a management system that you're following, what we've established many years ago, have a list of essential suppliers and service providers, and prioritize them. Prioritize them based on, again, your needs. As we have different triggers for escalation of emergencies, we may get to the point where we have to, again, scale back in some of the treatment process chemicals, whether it's residue management for those who have it at surface surface water plants. So there is certainly an opportunity, and I think that having that list, so again, a benefit of DWKMS of how we have organized ourselves and how we have a list which has backup. A lot of suppliers or service providers have secondary, we have some secondary service providers, again, not to be surprised that we can't get a delivery or we can't get a contractor on site. At the region of Peel, just quickly, we have issued letters to the contractors, more so to confirm that we have some of the measures in place for to protect our staff, but also to kind of reconnect and say, you are our essential supplier, we can count on you, and please, if you have any issues, any challenges with the delivery or providing a service to us, please connect. So again, that communication, that transparency of how this pandemic is affecting us all is really critical. And I'll go over to Nick with any questions that you may have from the audience.
I don't see anything on this topic, so I think we're good to go.
Good to go. Okay. So question number 5.
All right. So on WARN, I'm going to first explain it because there was at least a few people who didn't know what on WARN was, at least 30%. So I did want to explain it. So ONWARN is the Ontario Water Wastewater Agency Response Network, and it's a group. The WARN program is found throughout North America specifically. It does tend to be regional, so that we are within the area of same utilities that can respond in emergency. What it is an agreement that is put in place with all of the member associations or organizations that in the event of an emergency, they will put out the notice to the group, to the members. And if somebody has that resource that's available, they aren't obligated to provide it. So there's no requirement on that end. But if you did have it available, you are able to share that resource. All of the legal pieces and instruments have been figured out beforehand. So specifically looking at a pandemic situation, the most obvious resource that we'd be looking at sharing is operators and staff. So figuring out who the employee still works for, what health and safety policies they're following, are they covered by WSIB, where is their insurance, all of that is figured out in that preliminary acceptance. There's an agreement that needs to be signed off by the municipality to become a member. And then once you're a member, that's where you'll work within the network to hopefully assist. And I know in currently our municipality, the City of Orillia, is not a member. I have worked at a couple of other municipalities where we were members of ONWARN though. So I know examples of resources as well, not just staffing, is things like, I remember hearing a story in the United States in an area that didn't normally get snowfall. They had a huge snowfall event over several feet of snow, and they put a call out for snowplows because the one water treatment plant had a really long driveway off of a road. All of their vehicles that were capable of doing snow removal were working on the roads. So they put out a call for a snowplow. It can be for portable pumps, things like that. So the interesting thing about ONWARN and even thinking about the pandemic, from my perspective, our pandemic planning had always been that the pandemic was gonna be localized. And in this situation, we're in a global pandemic, where this is impacting not just us, not just our neighbors, but across the world. So I'm interested if the one person who has had experience using ONWARN for assistance, I'd be interested in hearing about that. I'm also interested to hear if anybody has any opinions about how how they feel that their municipality would be. I can say for us, if we were requested to try and provide that resource of operators, if we were fully staffed, fully healthy, I know we'd be very nervous about it because we don't have such a large group that a few illnesses or taking away from that is going to impact our operations pretty significantly. So, you know, I, as much as Onward is a great resource, I'm curious how people feel like in this global pandemic, would it be an effective resource? Are people going to be able to support other people? So, Nick, has anybody put up their hand?
I'm not seeing anything at this time.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing, then we'll carry on and keep going.
So the next question is with respect to the municipality or utility temporarily changed or suspended any work activities because of COVID-19. So I have spoken to many municipalities on this topic. So there's been varying degrees of responses to, I'm going to call them, staffing concerns. And this was early on in the pandemic, so a few weeks ago. Speaking of outside workers, you know, our frontline water and wastewater staff, there's a few variables that we looked at in Stratford. First of all, from an external stakeholder perspective, contractors and the public, that was pretty easy decision to limit these interactions to emergency contact only. And in those cases where contact was necessary, we are following a screening process before close interaction. And again, using personal PPE as required. Inside workers, I know someone spoke to working from home earlier, where functionality exists in terms of being able to you know, connect with the servers and things from home and having laptops. Our IT department did reach out, and we managed to send, I'll say, 50% of our inside workers home to work from home with a work plan and functionality in terms of laptops. Outside workers, of course, don't have that luxury. However, I have spoken to municipalities, and some have chosen to send staff home, whether that's on a rotating shift. Some have chosen to split crews into different reporting locations. We've done that at the city of Stratford, or reporting directly to job sites. Some have gone to shifting, putting in afternoon shifts. Our public works, for example, have three shifts now. So they've segregated that workforce into three separate shifts. And the point, I guess, is to separate as much as possible through either time or space. Above all else, we've also initiated cleaning activities for our vehicles, both before and after. Our mechanics, when we're still going forward with maintenance on vehicles, they have a process now that they'll clean themselves into the vehicle, clean themselves out of the vehicle as well. So it's just about really looking at each individual case, each individual activity, and how you want to address it. Again, this is going to vary from organization to organization. And again, it's going to depend on the size, the complexity of the system, and the resources. And as Marcus referred to earlier, they just happen to have a system where it works for them that they're able to segregate without having to send anyone home or reduce their work staff. As far as non-essential work, personally, this has basically been a case-by-case basis. Again, I've kind of sent some feelers out to look at flushing activities, spring flushing. Is that essential? And it will depend on who you're speaking to. It's about 50% right now have gone forward with their spring flushing programs. So that's interesting. It's just an interesting note. Depends on how the organization is deeming those activities. As far as the survey, we had 71% prioritizing work and temporarily eliminating a number of non-essential activities. I think that's where we are with the city of Stratford. There are some minor repairs that we will follow through on. And again, we've separated our vacuum excavation from the actual repair. So the vacuum excavation will go in first, perform the dig, they'll leave, a second crew of two will come in and perform the work. So things like that to try again to segregate as much as possible. It looks like 21%. We've made some modest tweaks to our work activities. About 4%, not many responses, haven't changed any work activities yet. And again, it's kind of out of context. It's hard to know what the level of activities were on a normal maintenance schedule. So again, I think Marcus referred to the, you know, meeting minimum standards to meet the regs. Absolutely. That is number one. And then we kind of go from there in terms of what else do we want to do. I can open it up to Flora, Nick. I don't know if anyone's chimed in.
Yes, we have a couple of responses that came in through the chat. Firstly, is from Durham regarding the Onworn situation. They were the one that used Onworn in the past. They needed a portable odor control solution, which was received from Waterloo. So a good example of utilities helping each other to deal with unexpected circumstances. So I guess the other aspect to Onworn is loaning equipment and so on. At Loyalist Township, we have another comment. They have split their operation staff into two crews of five operators and a maintenance tech, and they are on home or work rotation. So they're either home or at work. We are doing online training as well. Most important reason to keep our operators healthy, as we have a small workforce responsible for four treatment plants. So thank you for the comment from Loyalist Township.
Absolutely, great great points as well. And we've done the separation of shifts as well, or separation of locations. And even our pump stations, we've kind of split into two separate almost crews. So one crew looks after, you know, X number of pump stations, the other crew looks after the remaining. I do know some organizations are going to a work on a 2-week basis, I believe. I've heard out in the United States where the larger treatment plants, they'll actually have crews go in for a 2-week period, and then they'll rotate on a 2-week period. So that those are the larger plants. I can't speak to that. We run a small collection and distribution system here at the City of Stratford. And again, I think the main point is it'll depend on the complexity, size, treatment versus distribution, collection versus wastewater treatment. So a lot of interesting things out there. And we've kind of, you know, in the last few weeks, it's very fluid. Things are changing day to day. Right now, we've delayed our flushing until next week after the long weekend and Easter. Again, that might change by the time we get there. And it's kind of, you know, day by day, week by week analysis of what's going to work best for your organization.
So, Mike, we have another question from October Bell. And so, October, I'll unmute you, and the floor is yours.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to speak on behalf of Region of Peel with respect to the determining which tasks are required for our capital projects. And we generally have many, many capital projects going on at any given time with quite a large system. So our Public Works Operations Emergency Operations Center has undertaken the task of prioritizing all of the capital work that's ongoing so that anything that could be highest priority is going to be taken care of and completed. Anything else that can stop has stopped. But in the meantime, we are trying to maintain our contractors working because we don't want anyone to be out of work, out of paycheck. So any pipes that can be put into the ground, we're allowing that construction to proceed without actually taking them through the commissioning and bringing them online steps. And any work that needs to be done to that was nearing completion that we need to complete in order to maintain water supply or remove road closures, those ones we're treating as a higher priority. But that's one of the measures that we've taken within Peel to try to prioritize some of the work that's being done.
Thank you, October. And that's an interesting point too, with Doug Ford's announcements last week with the construction industry. We're kind of going through an analysis right now is replacement of infrastructure emergency critical to be completed. I think right now we're going to go forward with the reconstruction. New residential, of course, has been put on hold. But as you know, as it stands right now, I think we're going to continue to move forward, as October has mentioned with Peel, you know, move forward with those capital projects.
So Mike, we have another comment from Amanda, who's asking, can I ask if anyone has asked their staff to wear masks?
I can speak to that as well. I will be speaking to it in a question coming up. So I don't know if we wanted to wait there is a question on PPE for wastewater. So I could address PPE in general on that question, just to keep things moving, if that works.
Sounds good.
Okay.
We have another question from Mike Klein, who talks about activities and was asking, could you please talk a little bit about sanitary sewer main flushing?
Okay, again, that's I do address that in question 9. We did have a bit of a survey there. If that can wait, I can address all of the wastewater sewer flushing and the PPE associated with that in question 9.
Sounds good. Then we're free to move on.
Okay, great.
Justina, you have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. question 7, really, through question 7, we really wanted to gauge of what everybody's doing in terms of monitoring and sampling programs. Again, seeing the results, we are managing and achieving quotas. We did actually hear that in previous questions and the discussion that we had. It's good to see that. We also did hear that regulatory requirement or relief from regulatory requirement may not be required for these parameters. certainly, I did speak to some of the scaling back of lead testing, because again, we can't get into these buildings. There is also at the region of Peel, we're scaling back on the numbers of samples we're collecting and just bringing it down to the minimum required. Having a system or interconnected system up in Caledon in the region of Peel, we are taking 3 times the amount of samples that we actually are mandated. So we are removing those first before we start looking at any further elimination of sampling activities. At the region of Peel, we are fortunate to have sampling stations throughout South Peel and North Peel. So all our systems are retrofitted with sampling stations. So we don't have to actually go into the building to collect a sample unless it's through an activity, which I mentioned earlier, of any repairs or like breaks or if a water quality complaint is assessed to be critical, and we're looking at the quality of supply or integrity of the system at stake, then obviously that would be assessed. So for regular routine sampling, we don't have to, this doesn't affect us, and that's perhaps why we also have the ability to maintain it. I see that a group of people have actually asked for relief from these programs, so not necessarily knowing whether that breaks down into the lead testing, which is private plumbing, residential samples that need to be collected, or whether it's bacteriological or chemical parameters that they're also looking at to be relieved from. At the region of Peel, we've also taken the approach of any type of chemical testing, so the schedules 23-24. It so happened that it landed, our annual sampling landed in mid-April. We had very quickly accelerated that, the provision of the regulation in place to have that buffer, so you can move it back and forth. We had coordinated with our lab to have sampling bottles ready, and we had head staff at the time. I mean, we still do operate with full resources, but staff jumped at the opportunity to having it done and not to have to worry about it. So we were good. I would be happy to hear what other people have to share, or if there are any questions on sampling requirements and distancing measures that are in place. Nick, anything from the audience?
At this time, nothing on those two topics, but we have a couple of comments that we'll add into the PPE discussion down the road.
Okay, great. So we're moving on to question number 8.
Thank you, Justina. So we kind of touched on this as Mike was talking about work activities, the topic of the construction projects specifically came up. And it does look like over half of us have prioritized, and we're really focusing on what is the highest priority and what's the risk of stopping that work. There's still quite a few people where all construction work is still in place or all construction work has stopped. So it really seems in this category, we have that broad spectrum again. I do think that this again relates to the complexity of your system, what's the resource level of your staff and the ability to manage these. I know with the changes from the provincial government last week about the essential versus non-essential and changing those construction activities, our municipality went through an exercise where we had to identify all of our capital projects and determine if they were essential or non-essential. Because of our industry being water, wastewater, and we were one of the community services that is an essential service, the majority of our projects still were identified as being essential under that definition. We still internally have assigned which ones can be delayed without having too much issue. We're gonna proceed with capital projects that are procurement of purchases only, so new instrumentation and things like that. That's gonna have a very minimal operational impact, able to still proceed. But for the most part, I do know we have a large construction project that impacts water, wastewater, stormwater, road reconstruction as well. And it is a linchpin project because there's a lot of impact to our waterfront area that the city council directed is going to be bringing forward in future years. And this project is going to continue just because it is such a key project to proceed with in our community. So I'm curious if anybody can talk about what the rationale was for continuing all the construction or even vice versa, for stopping all of the construction. If it's as I was saying, and Mike has said previously as well, about that complexity and what your resource level is.
Not seeing any hands up at this time, Laura.
Okay. And I did have another question that came up actually today, especially with the new definitions of essential and non-essential. Has anyone had contractors reaching out for documentation to show that they are essential contractors? We have now, and so we're getting ready to prepare some new documentation. And I believe that this is in regards to really ensuring that lockdown, that people are staying home. So, you know, if police are stopping you, do you have a legitimate reason to be heading out on the road? And how do you prove that? That seems to be where the contractors has come to us from. Just wondering if anybody else has had a similar experience and if they have, what are you including in that information?
Thanks, Laura.
All right. So maybe we know we have some questions in regards to the next one. So I'll head it off to Mike now.
Great. Just move my screen around. So I think we had somebody had mentioned, or there was a few questions regarding PPE specifically for sewer flushing activities. So if you were able to join us 2 weeks ago, we did have Nicole McClellan from Stantec do a presentation regarding overall coronavirus and how the impact to water and wastewater industry. And one of the key takeaways for me in that presentation was the recommendation I would think it is at this point to wear a full face shield and in combination with a certified mask for any kind of sewer flushing or sewer activity, whether it be treatment, aeration tanks, sewer flushing, where there's the possibility, I guess, of droplets, which is, I guess, the way the virus can be transmitted. So with that, we personally at the city of Stratford, we postponed all our sewer flushing activities, and we've ordered hard hat adapted full face shields to be worn with the mask. I haven't received those yet. There was a 7 to 10 day waiting period. So that's kind of the one takeaway I had from that. That webinar is available on the OMWA website if for anyone that didn't get a chance to see it. As far as the water treatment components, the takeaway from that was there's not as much risk in terms of any kind of getting the virus from water activities such as flushing. So again, I'm not a health expert on that, but that was the takeaway from that webinar from 2 weeks ago. So for us, sewer flushing has ceased, has been postponed until we get the proper PPE. And again, I know in general terms, PPE is worn with sewer flushing activities, or it should be worn. Whether that was a mask previous to this outbreak, to this pandemic, likely not. I didn't see too many staff or contractors wearing masks while doing sewer flushing activities. I think the transmission of other disease that's associated with sewage is through the mouth or through, not through the droplets. And I guess that's what makes the COVID-19 a little bit different, is that it's actually through the air that it can be breathed in or into your mucous membranes as it was. So with that, I'll open it up to the audience, and it looks like majority, or 43% of the responses did say they had additional protective equipment. Curious if the face shields were hard hat adapted. I know those weren't easy to find. In the current policy at City Stratford is to wear a hard hat with doing sewer flushing activities. So we couldn't remove one component of our PPE to make another component adaptable. So we had to order the adaptable face shield. So just curious if those face shields that those people have received were hard hat adaptable, or anything else that you've done differently in response to the COVID-19. I see some have worked with public health, with staff. I'm just curious if anyone could comment on their local public health and what their directive was. And for those that are no business as usual, standard PPE in effect, perhaps I'm just curious on the response to that, if staff has any concerns from any kind of a health and safety perspective. Nick?
We have a couple of comments that came through. First one is from Julie at Greater Sudbury, who is indicating that their wastewater staff must wear masks and face shields around the sewage head house and any open air tanks to avoid possible airborne droplets. So that's consistent with the messaging. And also that, has anyone enforced half mask respirators for any work at all? So that's a question. We also got one from Sarah in Smith Falls, who is asking, Mike, where did you order the hard hat adapters for the face shields?
I had a feeling that would come up. I think I'd have to look it up on my email, but I can email you that, or I can email that to the group following the presentation today. I don't want to make an error in the company that I ordered from, but I can pass that along to you for sure. My apologies.
So that was the input that we got on this particular question.
Yeah, and I will say, before I pass it along to Justine, I would say that was a key takeaway from 2 weeks ago. Again, this is day by day. We're learning new information and how to respond and from a water wastewater perspective. So it's the importance of doing these webinars and having this collaboration today.
Great. So moving on to question number 10, which speaks to visitors, just contractors or inspectors from the ministry to access the facilities or our systems, just to visit and see how we do work or actually perform the work, and whether we have put any measures in place. So you can clearly see from the responses that we got that there are some additional criteria. They have to go through screening. There is a checklist in place that people are using the Ministry of Health-based checklist, and I'm not sure how others, those who have not implemented these measures, are dealing with it, whether they just perhaps shut down access to their facilities. I can certainly speak for the region of Peel that our surface plants and our treatment facilities up north, the groundwater systems, we are not, aside from essential contractors who come in again and perform the work with our staff, or if they are working, that they could be working alone, as long as they as long as they maintain the physical distancing and all the screening of travel, prior travel, or any symptoms that may, or exposure to anyone who is symptomatic. So there's a lot of questions that we have in place, and we do allow contractors to again perform the work that is required, that is essential. However, aside from that, we are not welcoming visitors to our facilities. I did mention inspectors, and I think we did have a question earlier on how do we deal with inspections. It is a new inspection year, and is there a relief that's required? Definitely ministry's inspection program is something that they carry out, and they launch it every year for annual visits. I did from communication with the ministry hear that the inspection program is delayed. Actually, a lot of compliance colleagues from other municipalities had also been contacted by their local office to say that inspections will be delayed. I know that the ministry may be considering a different format in the future. Again, this is not going away. We may be virtual and working from home, and certainly not welcoming visitors for a few more months. In that sense, the ministry may consider doing a documentation review and maybe not looking at doing an on-site inspection, but still have an opportunity to review some of the trends or information station parameters, and certainly to deem us working operating in compliance at a certain level. So hopeful that that answered the question, because somebody was inquiring whether inspections are still ongoing. They probably should be contacting the local office and having a chat with the inspectors, but that is a communication that we received so far. With those who answered they have no additional measures, they rely on the visitors to follow their own corporate policies. I wanted to ask, how do those ensure that those policies align with the municipalities or those of the Ministry of Health screening checklist? Certainly, this is important to protect our staff. So if anybody wants to raise a hand and speak to that, that would be great. And those who are looking for more guidance, I'm hopeful that this session today is providing that. So ask questions and share information, and I'm going to check with Nick to see if anybody had asked the question.
Thanks, Justina. We had a couple of comments that came through the chat. Julie from Greater Sudbury offers that Granger Canada sells different types of hard hat face shield adapters. And from what she can remember, the cost ranges from somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $50 per unit. So that's a helpful clarification. And also we have a question from Adam from the township of Selwyn. Does anyone know how this crisis is viewed through the Construction Act? And his question is specifically with respect to capital projects and the ability or inability to conduct thorough pumping station inspection for commissioning due to restrictions and risks.
Yes, anyone would like to speak to that from the operational aspect?
So I know from our perspective, we did have some concerns that even if we deemed the project essential, tree upgrade at our wastewater treatment plant that has been ongoing for a long time and nearing the end. So I know that they are working towards trying to satisfy their concerns for their staff while we still get this large project commissioned and moving forward. But I think at that point, it's going to be mostly a collaboration and a discussion between our staff as well as their staff and the project management to try and determine what we can do. Because at the end of the day, some of these projects that are essential need to be finished and they need to go forward, even understanding some of those risks. Try and share the information that we have available. It could be that we have more information about what are the hazards, what are the PPE, what do we need to watch for, and try and educate them and at least alleviate some of the concerns to have them on site. So.
Thanks, that's all I have at this time.
Okay, great, so we'll move on.
So the next one is about, has the COVID-19 impacted your notification protocols for wastewater spills and bypass events? And I must say that as when this question came up in the survey, I thought, oh, that's interesting, hadn't considered that. So this was definitely something I know the superintendent of wastewater treatment and I had a discussion about this. We are in that majority of the group that, you know, our existing notification protocols are in place, and mostly because we hadn't considered it. That being said, we are getting into spring. Luckily for us up here, it's been a relatively slow snow melt. So it hasn't been one of those crazy seasons where we're dealing with a huge inflow and infiltration and trying to manage that, where you're more likely to have spills and bypasses. But I am interested to hear, it's a very small percentage of people who have changed their communication protocols, and I'm interested to hear what those changes were.
I'm not seeing any hands up at this time, Laura.
All right, well, something to take away, and I know this is exactly the example for us that of things that I'm glad we're participating in this, having these conversations, so that this is something we put on our radar for consideration for going forward. And I'll pass it on to you, Mike.
Thanks, Laura. Set to unmute myself. This next question looks at the COVID-19 emergency and cost relief programs for ratepayers and how that may impact our cash flow and revenues. So I'm not a CFO. I'm not going to pretend to do any kind of in-depth analysis, but we'll go over the responses. So we, about 50%, haven't noticed any impact to this point. And I'm wondering if that's, due to the current budgets already approved. In fact, budgets could be down, for example. I'm thinking with materials, I can speak City Stratford, our water meter changeout program is non-existent at this point. So there's no purchasing of meters. And non-essential work is in that full capacity. So we're not, we're not putting orders in as we normally would. On the treatment side of things, of course, we're still ordering our chemical and our essential material to keep the water supply going. The impact, I guess, maybe in 2021, do we need to revise our financial plan once this is over yet 15%? Interestingly enough, we approved our financial plan as per QMS in January, so we do have a brand new financial plan, which will go into effect in 2021, and it will be interesting to look at the impact to what our rates may be next year. City of Stratford, and I've noticed this across through some chat rooms, there have been some changes through council resolutions. So for City of Stratford, we've suspended water disconnection shutoffs for non-payments, so we're not shutting people's water off. That would make sense. The same is true for waiving of penalties, interest, and late payment charges and other fees related to water and sewer billing And then we're suspending all progressive collection activities until further notice. And I think for Stratford, I think it's until late August at this point. And again, that's probably a moving goalpost, and it could change, depending on how long we get into this. So again, pretty much all I have from a personal standpoint, I'm just curious, those that haven't noticed an impact, do you expect to notice one this year, 2021? We'll worry about our finances once the emergency is over. That seems to be, sadly, that's the way it is in not only in business, but in our personal lives as well. I think we're just all trying to get through this, and we'll worry about the impact later. And what that impact will be, I guess, is up to be, well, we will see what that impact will be when this is all said and done. So I don't know if anyone's got anything further to add on their analysis of what the potential impact could be. Nick?
I'm not seeing it, anything. Oh, just one just came in at this moment. Smith Falls. They may need to consider relief for their drinking water license and drinking water works permit, which is scheduled for next week. The financial plan may not be completed within the time frame because of procurement and public consultation considerations. So a bit related to finances and the works permits.
And absolutely, and I guess through all of this, councils are through Zoom meetings probably, but they're non-existent. Our committee and subcommittee meetings are no longer, so everything goes straight to council. So again, everything's being prioritized in terms of getting approvals. So there'll be delays in that process as well. Interestingly enough, our permit and license at the City of Stratford is currently under review. We submitted everything in January. So again, getting things in just before this all occurred, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any delay in getting that license and permit before the June 30th deadline. With that, I don't know if Justina or Laura had anything to add to that question.
Well, we have another hand up from Windsor.
Go ahead.
So I'll unmute you in Windsor, and the floor is yours.
Thank you all. Just to kind of add on to that with respect to what we're doing, our ratepayers, we've got a moratorium, obviously, on disconnecting. And in fact, we've gone back and communicated to customers that we've actually disconnected and reconnected them as well. So we do expect to see that debt probably pile up a little bit for people that cannot pay at this point. It was a decision that our senior management team made with respect to making sure that they have the essentials for disinfection and keeping clean, obviously, with respect to COVID. In addition to that, with respect to finances, we have obviously suspended all of our capital works at this point, only essential capital works. And right now, we don't really have anything on the go unless we were to have an emergency breakdown. But overall, with respect to revenues, we are already seeing a 10% drop in usage. Many of the big industrial customers and shops have closed down. So we're going to probably have to reevaluate because everything is obviously based on the rates that we collect. And we'll have to see what either needs to be repurposed as far as finances go. And we're doing our best to try to keep the funding going with respect to our operations staff. So everybody's full, everybody's working, everybody's employed, and we're doing the best that we can, I guess, to keep things moving. So that's our update with respect to cost relief and how our cash flow and revenue is.
So we did receive another comment from Corey at the City of Thorold, who says, I contacted them about my license renewal and they responded to submit what you have and indicate what is missing with an approximate time frame when it can be submitted. They used the financial plan as an example and realized there will be delays. So thanks, Corey, for that.
Thank you. I don't know if Justina or Laura has anything to add. If not, we could move on to our final survey question.
I was just going to mention, I know for us, we actually submitted a permit to take water renewal in November. The permit expired March 31st. The ministry reached out just the day before the deadline to confirm that we had submitted within 6 months, so the required, or 3 months, the requirement that they need for a review. And because our submission was on time, our permit has now been assumed to be renewed and extended. If we had not made that submission at the appropriate time, that's where it sounds like we would have, which would have been interesting. We have two permits to take water. We would have lost all of our groundwater sources. So that would have been an interesting conundrum to have been under. So I'm grateful that in November, we submitted our application at that time. So.
And at the Region of Peel, we've submitted in May of 2019. So we received our new templates for the licenses and drinking water works permits for all the systems in November. Hence my comment earlier about some new conditions that are in our legal instruments that specific to source protection and some of the requirements that we may not be able to meet. So with that, I'll move on to the next question, which is our actually last question from the poll. This speaks to compliance with staff training criteria in 2020. This is actually kind of a loaded question because it meeting the staff criteria, obviously we are training staff and making sure that they remain competent to maintain a certification and licensing, so water, wastewater. And with that, we did talk about the new regulation 7520 that came out earlier on March 24th, and it does provide provisions on renewal of certification licensing. It actually speaks to current certificates, so valid certificates will continue to be valid for an extended period of time. It's 150 days or 90 days after the order ends. So for those who are not sure if renewal of certificates and licenses for your staff is coming up, not to worry, the ministry is helping with that blanket relief. For training, certainly in-classroom training is difficult to carry out. A lot of us, I think, are shifting to other options, online training, and some of vendors are actually really quickly adjusting and adopting online. There's a lot of different online applications that can help with that type of training or that method of training. And I know that it's different for water and wastewater. There's also a question of how we're gonna maintain training for the year for wastewater staff. Certainly the difference of the 3-year cycle for water versus 1 year for wastewater may be challenging. Again, I haven't heard much more other than that certification licensing extension. With that, training is directly related to that, so I am expecting that there will be some flexibility. In terms of online training, and I think that that's flexibility that we have, that any type of training that is specific to the work we do, so related to the work that staff are performing, could count as the on-the-job training. There's no requirement for CEUs as it is on water. So I think that just sourcing some related training may be good. Another thing is, when do staff take the training? If we're short of staff and we maximizing the time in the field, we may have to look at taking that online training outside of the regular hours when they're in the field. There's also technology. In Peel, we are fortunate to have every staff equipped with a tablet. So they have mobile solution with access to internet, and they can pretty pretty much any online training with a link that is compatible, we can have them take that training at any time. It is a little bit difficult. Sometimes technology may be challenging for some operators who are not necessarily used to operating or looking at different functions of a laptop or a tablet for that type of work. And you know, some training or just assistance is crucial. So again, being fortunate, the region of Peel, that we have a large group of support teams. It's not happening at every municipality. We have the ability to again guide staff through any challenges that they have with that. I also wanted to speak to OCO exams before we actually turn to the audience. There were a lot of questions regarding exams that operators have signed up for, or operators who are looking to sign up for, to upgrade the certification or the licenses. My first question would be probably not something to consider at this time when we are challenged with, you know, we went through 12 questions of all the different challenges that in the situation that we're in with the pandemic. Probably the last thing that we may want to entertain at this time, unless, of course, it's necessary. But again, with the provision of anyone being able to operate the system, that Regulation 75 provides flexibility. So upgrades probably would not be priority. But back to exams, the OCO had issued a communication for those who are part of the Water Wastewater Municipal Compliance Committee. You do know that I posted it on our forum. Up to May 29th, all the exams had been cancelled by OCO. So this is now official. If you had any staff wondering and asking questions, the exams will not be taking place. And I'm mentioning it because I think that there were some questions that the ministry in our list that we provided a week ago that did ask whether exams could be proctored at the site of the municipality, whether at least OIT exams could be carried out that way. So now we have it. We have the information that no exams will be taking place until May 29th. And I suspect that we will hear closer to the date of how we're going to be proceeding with future examination. So just looking at the answers, the responses we received, a lot of people, which is good to see, 68% are looking at online courses to help staff, you know, pending certificates or license renewals. And also, I think to just refresh ourselves on certain areas, because not always do we perform the work we do in, again, equipped and this could be training more specific on health and safety and how to protect ourselves as well, which is relevant. And lastly, since I am mentioning protection and health and safety, I wanted to point out that for those who are considering a lot of health and safety type courses, a lot of them actually are CEUs, so it's very to our advantage that we have these courses available. MOL, so the Ministry of Labor, had made, again, they made a provision, or there's flexibility in courses that are mandated, and that's the working at heights. They have extended that cycle from 3 years to 4 years. So again, if your staff are scheduled to renew that certification with working at heights, don't worry, we have an extra year. I think that there's a lot of discussions on other health and safety type training, confined space. It could be, we have a working alone, different type of procedures or training in place that, again, ensures that the staff are safe. some of them are internally established, so we've made them kind of critical or mandatory for staff, and we've established a frequency of when they have to renew that training. Some of them actually do receive certificates for it, but may not necessarily, again, regulated. So we are working with vendors to make sure that that training could be ongoing. Again, a different platform, so online or conference calls we've been looking at. There's certainly, you know, different people are differently equipped. Not everybody may have access to a computer at all times. So that's for me. And if there are any other comments or questions, please, Nick and the audience, please raise your hand.
Thanks, Justina. Yes, we did have two comments. The first was in relation to ALCO processing upgrades from OIT to level ones. I think you covered that one. And the second one was from Sarah in Smith Falls, who's asking, what online training resources are municipalities using? We've used Cal State correspondence courses. And she had her renewal processed, just renewed with no issues, and it was back within 2 weeks on submitting the application. They are all in Smith Falls. They are also assigning operators that are not at the plant to review SOPs or other policies online, and or take online training courses, although they have not been provided with electronic devices.
And that's a really good point that depending, again, whether it's water or wastewater, you could have staff reviewing procedures and refreshing themselves on different activities. And that would be, that would qualify staff to get those training hours, again, for wastewater. For water, it's a little bit more stringent, and there's a certain criteria. You have to have a level of a checking mechanism for understanding and the learning through that training. So whether it's a quiz or some form of checking whether that person had learned, and if this was truly the on-the-job training, or again, more so the CEU training, you would have to have that director approved. So it's a totally different ball game. But a lot of municipalities may have their own courses, so kind of in-house courses that are CEU approved. We certainly have a few in the region of Peel. I would perhaps also, as part of sharing, and we did talk about it earlier, of partnering is very important and meaningful, where if you go on the CEU approved list on OCO's site to see what courses are out there, perhaps it would be a good resource to see what other municipalities have and what they host and what the format of that training is, so we can maybe help each other if needed.
Justina, I should add, the OMWA has been looking in the last few weeks at solutions to hopefully being able to provide some sort of online training as well in the months ahead. So we are working and having discussions on that.
That's great to hear.
So we did get some feedback from Adam at the township of Selwyn, who helps out by saying that Sir Sanford Fleming College offers about 25 online water and wastewater courses that have CEU approval. So that's a good resource, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. For health and safety, which I did talk about earlier, NORCAT is, I know NORCAT has a number of courses. Again, not all of them may be qualifying for a full certificate, but if it's a refresher, and again, exercising due diligence, so this is what Peel did, we have considered just putting staff, those staff who are due to expire on the confined space training to go through the refresher. It's shorter, but at the same time, you track that they've attended it, they refreshed the knowledge on confined space entry, and this is what we can do, again, considering the circumstances, and just being due diligent and doing everything in our ability, considering the pandemic and everybody being in the same situation. I think that flexibility will be offered, whether it's through the Ministry of the Environment or the Ministry of Labor. Anything
so else? I don't see any other questions or comments at this time.
Okay. So with that,
all right, so I think I'm going to tackle the start of our closing remarks here. I just want to thank everyone for taking time out of their day. I know when all of this started to come, I felt like I had free time coming out of everywhere. because everything was being canceled. And now that we're fully involved, it feels like I have no free time. So I appreciate people taking their time out of their day to join us today. I appreciate the feedback that we got. I hope people are taking something away from today. And let's, as Justina just said, keep that communication and collaboration and partnership going, because it's truly valuable. I know, you know, this is one of the benefits of working in public sector is we don't have proprietary information and we're all happy to share. So let's keep that going forward. Everyone stay safe and healthy.
Great, thank you. I also wanted to thank everyone and just bringing everyone closer together. So this is like it's not social distancing because we are yet so close, virtual social distancing. And I wanted to thank once again the Ontario Municipal Water Association for providing that opportunity so we can have over 70 people online and being able to share the information. I also wanted just to emphasize and to leave you with that water, wastewater regulatory compliance forum. It's a great way to make new friends, communicate, share your challenges. People who hear of something first posted, others don't have to dig for information. It's a great resource. It's a helping each other, especially in this situation where everything becomes such a challenge. And similar to Laura, it feels that novelty of working from home wore off. I think that we had to readjust and we are in full swing. And if we can work together to just overcome the challenges, that would be great.
Finally, to echo what Justina and Lauren have said, thanks to everyone for joining us today. And in today's world, we're all super busy. Great response. Wonderful that everybody could join us today. There will be a recording of today's webinar and proceedings on the OMWA website at omwa.org. Today's event has been a collaboration between the OMWA and the Water Wastewater Regulatory Compliance Group. And a huge thanks to my fellow moderator, Justine Bershowitz, who's been tirelessly working, collecting data, preparing slides. Wow, what a great pleasure it was to work with you, and hopefully we can do it again in the future. I also want to thank Laura Smith for taking the time today to bring her experiences and professionalism to today's discussion. Wonderful to see you too, Laura. If you were able to join our webinar 2 weeks ago, I think we can all appreciate what it feels like to come together as an industry and have these discussions, a little bit of comfort, if you will, as we continue to share information. And again, things are very fluid these days. We're changing day to day, week to week, and to be able to collaborate and discuss and come together as an industry, water, wastewater, is just a fantastic opportunity to do that. And it does provide comfort, I think, to a lot of us to know that we're not going through any of this alone. Once again, I'd like to thank Justina and Laura for being such great co-moderators. And again, a special thanks to OMWA Executive Director Ed Houghton and his staff, Nancy Spagnolo, Nick Benkovich, and Ian Chadwick for working behind the scenes to making this webinar run as smoothly as it did. We trust that this has been helpful, and it will be impactful on the decisions you make as we go through this challenging times. I'm hopeful that you'll remain healthy and remain safe in the weeks ahead. Again, if not currently an OMWA member, please seriously consider becoming one. You won't regret it. Join the OMWA. Together is Better movement. And thank you again. Take care.